So now changing gears a little bit, moving on to the PIR of IFRS 13 and handing over to Aida.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Sue. So I hear you've been super quick with making decisions today, and that as a result of that, we get 2 hours to discuss IFRS 13.
It's all been easy.
So good. So Michael, does that mean I can go through every slide this time?
No, you can't.
He's always telling me, be quick, be efficient. So yeah, I mean, we are really pleased to be here today to hear your experience of applying IFRS 13 fair value measurements. And we did meet with some of you individually, or are about to meet with some of you individually, but really group discussion, I think, has some benefits. So thank you again for giving us the time on the agenda. So we have, this is agenda paper 12, I believe. That's how much you've done today, and we have a few slides. I'm just going to highlight some points on the post-implementation review in general, and also about our standard on fair value measurement, IFRS 13, before I ask you some questions. So, I mean, why are we here today? We are here because we have been spending last few months interviewing stakeholders to understand the impact the IFRS 13 has had on them. And why are we interviewing them? We are doing that because in accordance with ISB due process, after a major standard has been in place, has been implemented internationally for a couple of years, we are obliged to conduct so-called post-implementation review and look at the impact the standard has had on various stakeholders. Having said that, and you, I mean, you have been involved in the previous two post-implementation reviews on IFRS 8 and IFRS 3, so you'll be familiar with the process. I would say one, perhaps it's not a change, but one specific consideration we as a team here, Michael, Mariella, and myself, with Matt as extended team member there, are having in mind is that we do not take every stage of post-implementation review process for granted. So the process follows, has several stages, which we have on slide 4 here. First is what we are doing now, which is initial assessment of matters to be examined, if any, followed by the board discussion of what we have found and the board decision on whether a full request for information is required. And this is something we as a team will be considering carefully, so we are not making assumption just because we ought to review IFRS 13, a full post-implementation review is warranted. And you will have seen in the slides, especially because the feedback we've been getting so far from many stakeholders has been rather positive, and although there were issues being highlighted, those issues seem to be very focused in some areas, so we need to consider what is the best way forward to address that. And you know, conducting maybe full comprehensive consultation on entire standard may not be the right answer in this case. I mean, that is about the process itself. And just a couple of words on the standard IFRS 13. So it's a standard that was, it's not a standard that has introduced fair value to IFRS, as you know, but it is a standard that has consolidated application of the fair value, and it has provided a single source of measurement guidance for wherever fair value is required in standards. And it's also provided a single source of disclosures, well, single with some caveats, I'll come to that. So that was the objective, so what he was aiming to achieve. What the IFRS 13 did not do, or did not even try to do, is tell when fair value should be applied, and to what instrument it should be applied, and how often it should be measured. And this is a subject on underlying standards like IFRS 9, IS 40, IS 41. And therefore, as a consequence, in post-implementation review of IFRS 13, we are actually not reviewing when something should be measured at fair value or when it shouldn't. Naturally, you know, people still comment on this, and you know, we still listen to those comments, but we do try to make it clear that really, you know, if we are reviewing IFRS 13, we can only realistically review what is in the scope of that standard, and when something should be measured fair value is not. We have given just a couple of other areas, maybe just to remind you, and this is on slide 8, which talks about convergence with US GAAP, and the standards are substantially converged, and because US GAAP guidance on fair value it's been in place a little bit longer, so FASB has already conducted their post-implementation review, which has been completed a couple of years ago, and this slide highlights that in their review, although I have to say the reviews are somewhat different, so the FASB's review is more focused on the process of development of the standard, but nevertheless they do lots of similar things to us in sense of conducting outreach and so on. And they found that the standard met its objectives, benefits exceeded the cost, with one but, which is some comments around disclosures, and this is an area that they are working on at the moment as a part of a disclosure initiative project where they have proposed to introduce some additional disclosures relating to fair value measurements, and also proposed to give scope exceptions to some entities from fair value disclosures, which is not really relevant. It's mainly to do with private companies, which is not really then strictly relevant to IFRS world. And just as a reminder for you being interpretation committee, we thought it might be good to just remind us what you have already discussed in relation to IFRS 13. So on slide 9, we have set out just a little bit of history of various discussions. Lots of that has been gone through IFRIC. There was some things that have gone to board, and you would have had Mariella here in front of you in past when these topics were discussed. And as you will see, conclusion of those, like, there was no action taken then, and the main message was, let's kind of look at it collectively as a part of post-implementation review, and also noting that some of the issues discussed are perhaps not as widely spread, although they could be significant to specific jurisdiction or specific type of entities. So moving on to what we've been hearing so far on the post-implementation review, and as I said, the general feedback, and I hope it's not just our visual thinking, but it is really general impression from discussions, and we have so far met auditors, regulators, investors, Matt has been helping us to look at academic research in the area. And generally, there isn't a burning question. People don't say, oh, God, you have to fix this. This is wrong. General impression is standard is working well and is meeting, is basically fulfilling its objectives. But however, there is a however. And if there is a single however to emphasize, it is to do with the disclosures. So we've been hearing a lot from preparers about disclosures being very complex. Even to understand what is required is a comment from some, moving on to the comment of actually preparing it and questioning its usefulness. And I'll give you just example of one example of disclosures that we've been focusing on a fair amount recently, which is sensitivity analysis for reasonable changes in significant unobservable inputs that form part of level 3 measurements. And this is something we had a lot of feedback from banks, for example, about being disclosure that is not useful. But then on the other hand, when we speak to investors, they have quite opposite views in that it is useful, although there are suggestions about how it can be further enhanced, for example. So, but generally there seems to be a bit of agreement around lots of disclosures being boilerplate. So this is something, we as a team, I think, would be really interested in hearing from you. What is your impression? Is that consistent with your experience? And also in the outreach, naturally, these questions you have discussed at the Interpretations Committee, three times Q and unit of account, also highest and best use have come up during our outreach. So, before I ask the questions, maybe ask you if you have any questions for us now, either about the process or anything. Okay. So with the questions, so the questions for you on slide 11, and there's four questions, and I would suggest maybe putting in two groups. groups and ask you to address each of them. And the first group being really to comment on overall feedback we have heard and whether this is consistent with your impression, what your experience is, or what your understanding is of practice and any issues with IFRS 13. And then related to that is there anything incremental, is there anything significant you have noticed, observed, experienced that you think should be researched by us? So this would be the first group of questions we're asking. And then the second group is more practical, if you have particular advice about areas to do further investigation, you have particular suggestion what to investigate, how to investigate, and so on, rather than, you know, simply collecting views from the people. So with that, maybe I can ask you to share some thoughts with us. Thank you.
Yeah, probably a comment. Interesting that you mentioned IFRS 13 and the reaction of banking and the challenges with regard to sensitivity analysis and so on. I would assume that this topic for banks is even broader than in general for companies out of industry in general, except they have banking or they have huge derivatives or whatever. And more or less it is in here, but I just want to focus on it, that specifically with the relation to the disclosure initiative and so on, one should consider what is really necessary if your operating business is not within the financial industry and you do not have that huge derivative financial book. Yeah, so it is the balance between disclosures and the requirements of IFRS 13.
I think materiality might help us there. Mm. Looking at Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Bruce.
Thanks. A general comment on IFRS 13 from many of the companies and countries in the regions where I work. This is still probably the most problematic standard for them, from the point of view that, bear in mind, in many of the African countries, the concepts of liquid markets and obtaining fair values is still incredibly, incredibly difficult. They just don't have access to that type of information. And I think for people outside, obviously I think, like in most countries, the banking sector's probably got the bulk of the experienced people in them. You get out of the larger banks in those countries, there's just no skill sets at the moment, or very limited skill sets you can apply that. And I just think it's worthwhile pointing out that, I don't really know how much of a solution there is to that. But I mean, for example, the one thing that I've always pointed to, and I know it's been very well used, was the guidance on the unlisted equity instruments, where, you know, that kind of information came out was very useful to people, because where we kept saying, you need to fair value unlisted equities, they were like, how? Well, now there's something that gave them some sort of guidance, and I know that was well received. So that was just something that, you know, to see, maybe just think about in those areas where fair value, and I don't believe it's in Africa, I think any of the developing countries probably got similar concepts, that type of guidance is useful to them. And maybe as part of this to say, well, is there a need for more guidance in those areas where fair value is just
so
very
would
difficult?
You pick 1, 2, 3 if you were to suggest?
Sure. you talk about those, but I mean, for example, I mean, take simple things like PPAs and IFRS 3. I mean, those you talk to most of these guys about a business combination and the fact that you need to split up this and fair value intangibles and those type of stuff. They just dump it all goodwill for no other reason than the practicality in some of those markets of getting those kind of values out. It's just impossible for them. And I think that, you know, we are getting to a stage where for many of the countries where I go to, they don't have, they're not really compliant. That's the reality. And the reality says that they're saying, we haven't got the skill sets, we haven't got the ability. The standard is great when you're applying it and you're sitting at a large bank in London, because you've got enough skill set to help you do it. But in the other areas, there just is not. So maybe that's part of when you guys are doing some of the outreach, just in, you know, listen to some of those markets in terms of the fact that there are some very, very serious challenges on getting fair value in those markets. Even with financial instruments, I mean, you know, when you've got a stock exchange with 20 companies and the movement is so minimal every day, there's just no liquidity in the market.
Yeah, so do you think sharing experience with some other markets that maybe have more skills is helpful or is not helpful because there's so much less liquidity in emerging markets.
I think anything could be helpful, whether it's sharing experiences with them, whether it's putting guidance. You know, I guess I probably don't, as I said, I don't really think I've given enough thought to what the solution is, I guess. But I'm saying while we're going through this exercise and you're looking at where the challenges are, maybe that's one of the things, is to say what are the type of things that would help people in those markets. Because, you know, the more IFRS goes from the old historic cost to fair value, this is just something that's going to get compounded continually. And I think with something like IFRS 9 coming along, it's highlighting where these guys have defaulted to cost on almost anything. You know, this is now going to be a bit of a challenge when 9 comes along. It just kind of puts a spotlight on the challenge that these people have just not been doing fair value properly.
Bertrand?
I have a question on the slides, Aida. On page 8, you mentioned on the one with the FASB, responded that it addressed some points identified in its research on pensions. Can you just mention what?
Yes, we have not heard anything concrete happening in this area yet.
But I mean, pensions, are they considering the asset side? Not the liability side.
Well, no, I don't think they're proposing to fair value liabilities.
Okay,
it's just a wild guess, Bertrand.
Okay,
John.
Yeah, I echo a bit what Bruce has said. I mean, I think there are particular challenges. I think overall IFRS 13 has been quite a good standard. I think it's been helpful. I think in providing requirements in sort of in helping people navigate their way to measuring fair value, and also sort of prescribing the disclosures. But I do think that in emerging markets, I mean, the issues that Bruce raises, and they're partly in the realm of this, there are standard setters and so forth to try and resolve with more guidance and more illustrative examples. But I think it's also a function of the lack of development of the valuation professions in many emerging markets, where there isn't really the expertise in valuing assets. And I suppose the more complicated the asset becomes and the valuation becomes, the more there's a lack of experience and expertise. So if you're in dealing with biological assets or PP&E or these sorts of intangible assets in business combinations, I mean, the lack of valuation expertise makes it particularly difficult for preparers in those jurisdictions. But it extends the whole way into financial instruments, because the markets are generally not as liquid or as well developed, so the valuation is the valuation determining a fair value is normally a modelling exercise, and the capabilities and people who understand the methodologies and sourcing the inputs and so forth is a real challenge in most emerging markets. I mean, my own view is that, you know, that more guidance, The more guidance that can be developed, the more illustrative examples, the more help about how to actually do it, application guidance for measuring different types of assets, sourcing different types of inputs, I think would be particularly helpful, because it's really an implementation challenge rather than necessarily a standard setting challenge. So I think that, I mean, to me, that's probably the biggest issue. I think there are other... I mean, I do think the disclosure requirements, and you've probably heard this already in the feedback, I think people really do struggle with the disclosure requirements, the volume of them, the usefulness of them. And again, I think there's a lack of understanding of them, so they're not able to navigate their way through to get to the heart of what actually is really relevant for disclosure, so it does become boilerplate. And people generally, certainly on the preparer side, they feel that there's pages of information, but really nobody uses it, nobody understands what it actually means. So I think reconsidering an objective-based disclosure which sort of focuses on what do people really need to know, how do we sort of get to the heart of what's really relevant to present to users around the measurement, I think would be really beneficial. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other, I mean, there's obviously valuing biological assets. We've had some issues come to the IFRIC before on valuing biological assets. That's particularly difficult and problematic. I mean, it's helped a bit by the amendment to IAS 41 for bearer plans. But again, in many of the markets where there are listed companies that use IFRS that are listed agricultural companies, it's probably one of the biggest issues for them is actually the valuation of their biological assets that they have on their books. And I mean, I'm a fan of fair value, so I wouldn't say go, you know, don't use it, but I do think a lot more guidance on it is required.
Your comment on the disclosure objective was a helpful one, I think, because I think one of the things we've been struggling with is, well, I certainly have, and I've only been to a fraction of the meetings, but is that I don't think users are telling us they want necessarily less information about level three assets per se, but there seems to be a, you know, it's not necessarily useful what's been provided, and preparers seem to be struggling with preparing that. So maybe if we could take a step back and be clearer what it is that we want people to be able to understand, maybe that would give a better basis. But we'll see. Tony.
Very similar, so I'll try and avoid repeating what Bruce and John have said. Similar thought about disclosures. My sense is because, if you like, it's not clear. It's not clearly objective focused. People are concentrating on making sure they put a tick in the right boxes, rather than taking a step back and saying, what is the story that the standard would like me to tell? And then attempting to tell that story. I think some of the changes to IS1 are helpful in terms of allowing a focus on materiality and so forth, but I think people are still not quite sure about the story that the board would like them to tell or that the users would like to see. And so I think I would echo some of what John said. I've sensed, as I've particularly talked about IFRS 9 to people, there's been sort of an assumption that they're going to be able to continue to say this is all a little bit difficult, so we'll do that at cost. And as soon as they cotton on to the, actually that's not the way the standard works anymore, if it's not an approximation of fair value, then you can't use it, then there's a, oh, well, how do we do it? So I would echo what John and Bruce said, and certainly in some parts of the world, there's a wide range of things that people find difficult because the techniques or the professionals are just not as well developed as they might be in other places. I think maybe the only thing that I would say in addition from some of the discussions that we've had is there are maybe some more questions around unit of account that goes beyond simply P times Q. So, for example, investments in subsidiaries, associates, joint ventures may well be a mixture, as we've talked about, in a different context of equity and debt investments. And so what's the fair value of the investment as a whole? Are you looking at that, all of those things together? Maybe a similar issue around private equity, where they've got an interest in different instruments. Is that something that you would look at as a single unit of account, or would you look at it as separate units of account? And then if you do end up not using P times Q, I'm not sure folks are clear what a control premium is, what you might take into account in deciding whether you should, or if you decide you should, what a control premium is. So I didn't start off by saying, yeah, and same sense as the others, that it seems to be working reasonably well, but there are some specific pockets within it.
Yeah, thank you. Young Sue?
As you know, I'm a professor. As a professor, I'm teaching IFRS 13 to the students, but it's very difficult to explain what IFRS 13 is actually saying to the students. Concept. We usually explain the concepts, but 30 minutes is more than enough to explain the concepts of IFRS 13. And if we try to find out the examples, it's going to be very difficult to find out the example that we can explain to the students. I sometimes try to make the questions out of IFRS 13. Maybe a couple of questions would be more than enough to extract from the standard. So what I'm trying to say is that maybe, you know, as Bruce said, application guidance should be much more helpful for the practice, but for the students, education guidance, education material would be very helpful too. And I think the education material could be helpful for the emerging countries practitioners research.
Thank you. Bonnie.
I think we've had some experience just dealing with 820 in a US environment and IFRS 13 in a non-US environment, and they're the same standard.
Waiting for the bot.
We've seen some differences in interpretation, and I would say it's more from a broader point of view, primarily in relation to kind of fair value of an entire entity and how that reconciles to a share price or market cap. Particularly in doing goodwill or, you know, other some of the entity valuations. I think in the U.S. we've seen at least the valuation teams that we use, I'm not going to name the firms, and our auditors, they're a bit more specific and reconciling kind of to a point in time. Whereas in outside the U.S., it's maybe a bit of a longer term approach, in that it's not kind of reconciling as of a point in time, but kind of looking at over a period of time, maybe ignoring if there's some volatility, that if it doesn't quite reconcile exactly, you know, your market cap versus where you see from an overall fair value point of view, that doesn't necessarily mean there's some kind of impairment or not. So I wouldn't say it's any specific input, but it's maybe an overall view. I think that's probably where we've seen maybe the biggest difference. I don't think it's material, but it is an interesting kind of phenomena that unfortunately we do see sometimes happening. If you're applying either IFRS or US GAAP in the US, you get maybe a little more less principles-based approach to it versus outside the US.
Do any of these advisors identify specific aspects of the standard that lead them to this different approach?
Not necessarily. I think it's more evaluation practice in the different jurisdictions.
Interesting. Yeah. I say that I feel much better after listening through Bruce's comments. I would like to say that I thought our markets were young and yet developed, but still, in this globe, we have some other places, other markets that are suffering more than Chinese and other Asian countries. So back to the question that I say that IFRS 13 is well written, and the target, the objectives are clear, and the way to approach the methodology or the guidelines are written to talk about all these issues around the globe. But I heard some comments about issuing more guidelines. I tend to say no, or we should be more careful about that. Since we are dealing with highly advanced economy like this, or the European countries, or the Americans, we're dealing with fast developing economies or environments like the Chinese and the BRICS. And at the same time, we have what Bruce mentioned, maybe African countries or some other countries far, far less developed, with very small markets, no liquidity or even no comparison, no history. So how should or how could we issue guidelines to cover all these? We can't issue guidelines to specific countries or even within developed countries. Maybe they're underdeveloped markets or industries or instruments. So just I like Tony's view on this. We need to step back to see a bigger picture, just to answer the disclosure complexity issues. We should let go of these or tight requirements, as long as the markets or the analysts or the auditors or the regulators are agree or are comfortable with the disclosure to tell the story of their valuation methodology and the story behind, it should do the work. Otherwise, we'll be dragged into the complexity of the world. We'll never finish the next steps of these kind of global practice. So I tend to say we should let go of some specifics, and hopefully, of course, we're going to stay with the principles and the key objectives of the standard. That's it. So to make this effort more comfortable and more successful. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to deal with all these differences, the wide, very wide gaps across the countries and markets.
Does anybody else have anything they want to mention to the staff? Did you want to?
Yeah, I mean, we had another question, but before I ask, let me just sum up what I've been hearing. And it is, I mean, several of you have mentioned that you don't have a burning issues with IFRS 13. However, there is there are views that there is more, perhaps, illustration, guidance, education needed, but contrasted with your point that you just made, that you know you can't actually address every eventuality and you know be wary of that fact. And this I'm just translating to myself might not mean anything to do with IFRS 13 directly, but it could actually be implemented as some kind of exercise that is either us doing something or facilitating something. And I'm really keen, and this is going back to the second question or third question in this list, further investigation or further work is really just brainstorm a little bit about ways we could address this. Because just to give you an example, one of the outreach meetings we had a few weeks ago, and there were regulators and saying, you know, how difficult it was, and giving us example of things they wanted to judge on or not wanted to judge on, and they didn't know how people in other jurisdictions were dealing with it. And when we asked them, did you actually speak, do you know how they do it, they said no, could you help us facilitate that? So they're saying, why don't you have like a forum of regulators that is not just, you know, IOSCO C1 committee, but all these emerging countries that struggle on day-to-day basis and you know are there. So I mean, ideas like that, if you have any thoughts about how it can be helped, because general feeling is it's not actually something necessarily wrong in the standard, but it's about helping people grasp these concepts, which are, you know, can be difficult when you don't have a market, when you don't have a developed valuation profession, and recognizing the fact that, you know, IFRS is not a market maker, nor is it valuation professional, but still it is in our interest that, you know, the standard is applied consistently and provides useful information. So, I mean, so that is really your thoughts about further work, whether, you know, you think we ought to investigate or delve into some areas deeper, or in the light of comments you have made, how can this be helped in addition to our kind of usual channel of getting issued to the board and saying amend paragraph 93, you know, and here or there.
I think the other thing, just to add to your list in terms of what I was hearing, was I think a number of you commenting about the way we've written the disclosure requirements and perhaps taking another look at that in terms of disclosure objectives, and can we describe in a clearer and more accessible way the objectives required for disclosures, but that also goes hand in hand with understanding that it's important that first of all people understand what's needed, and then making sure that we've provided some clearer disclosure objectives.
John?
I mean, just to come back to the point about application guidance and further examples, I mean, I've commented that the the development of the valuation professions in most of the emerging markets is at a very early stage. So, and companies are dependent really upon valuation professionals, and in the absence of deep valuation, a deep valuation profession, you know, they have to try and develop their own approaches towards determining valuation. So I think that any help in and guidance that can be given by the accounting community in terms of valuation methodology and examples of how things are different assets are valued. The other distinct factor about the valuation profession is it's really not organized as a valuation profession. It's actually organized by asset class. So someone who values derivatives will profess to know absolutely nothing about valuing investment property or valuing businesses or valuing intangible assets. So they're very much siloed. So again, examples and guidance across the different asset classes that shows the consistency of the application of IFRS 13 across different asset classes, I think is actually going to be very beneficial in building the level of sophistication of the methodologies that are used in valuing. The other area that I'll just touch on as well, where I think people have struggled and have sort of come, I think, a long way in the time that IFRS 13 has been out, is the classification in the fair value hierarchy. And I know, I mean, if you go through a sort of a 2 or 3 years of really difficult discussions about whether something is level 2 or level 3 or level 1. So again, in the PIR, I think I would look at whether the sufficiency of the guidance around determining the level, you know, the significance, guidance around the significance of an input and how you assess that for determining the fair value hierarchy. Because as I said, I think in practice we probably got to a fairly consistent position, but it's actually been, that's been quite a journey over the 2 or 3 years of the standards. So.
I guess one question for me is whether we've got the appropriate skill set to be providing the valuation guidance. Much as I'd love to, I'm not sure that I'm the expert, speaking for myself. What we did with the unquoted equities was we had a committee that helped us with drafting because of that, but I think a lot of people might say more support is needed, but I think one question will be any other observations, Tony?
Maybe two thoughts. One, a reaction to what you just said, and then secondly, a reaction to Aida's question. I think we probably just need to be a little bit careful about not letting it become an example for every circumstance. I understand that people are struggling with some aspects of it, but if there are clear principles in the standard, there is a risk with trying to address every example, because the next day you'll get a letter saying, hey, you didn't address mine.
Yeah.
So I just think examples can be helpful to illustrate, but just need to balance that between that and not having too many examples, or people will all want an example. The second thing, I was just interested, and you talked about the outreach, and you've been having conversations with a series of different constituents. Is there an intention to do a formal request for information the way you've done with other?
That is something that we will be asking the board about. Earlier this year at the Advisory Council advised the board not to automatically go to public request for information for all of its post-implementation reviews, but to take stock of what we learned through the first scoping phase, which is what we're in at the moment, and make a decision based on that. So one of the things that we will do when we bring this information to the board will be to help the board in making that sort of assessment and decision.
Yeah, I guess my sense is that I actually feel in this case it would be helpful, but if not, I think some of the sort of the feedback we've got today from what I've said or what John said or what Bruce said or what Jim said is to an extent anecdotal. It's sort of what we've heard from other people. I think it would be good to make sure that there is, however you get it, feedback from the people that are directly affected, rather than having it anecdotally being channeled through the three or four of us that have commented or some of the other people you've spoken to.
What sort of timing are we looking at for when the board's likely to be discussing that sort of next steps?
Yeah, I mean, we've been thinking about maybe December, but to be honest, as we sort of gather all this information together, I think there is possibly some going back and sort of rechecking, following up on some things that we've heard. So it may be that it's sort of January, February that we bring it to the board.
Were there other specific questions you wanted to ask, or?
No, I think that is it really.
That's helpful, and I'm sure if you think of something after the meeting,
yes,
staff would be very happy to hear.
You have our emails and the very last slide of the presentation there, and feel free to get out.
Thank you.